Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with Plush Care. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Hello everybody, welcome today and happy new year. I am here with the incredible Anna McNuff, author of Barefoot Britain, a story of running 2,352 miles, that's like 90 marathons across Britain, speaking, very importantly, speaking to Brownie and Girl Guiding groups along the way. So welcome Anna, thank you so much for coming on.
Oh, pleasure, absolute pleasure, always love chatting to you.
Awesome. It's great to have you here. And thank you so much, because I know that you are quite far gone with twins at the moment. So they could pop out any time. So
any moment.
Fingers crossed, but not in the next 45 minutes, eh?
Let's hope. It'd be exciting, though, wouldn't it?
That would be very exciting. We could talk you through it.
Absolutely. You could deliver remotely, virtual delivery.
Push. It's fantastic. Well, thank you so much for coming on. I absolutely adore this book. I loved your first running ebook that I read, which was Pants of Perspective. I haven't read Llama Drama, which I really need to read as well. But this account of you running barefooted across the whole of Britain, I just absolutely adored. And it's just so much more than a running book as well, as we were chatting about just earlier. But I suppose, first of all, we should probably cover like the why and the how of the barefoot running experience. So can you just, for anyone who was living in a cave and didn't know that you were running barefoot across Britain, what gave you the idea first and foremost to do it without shoes on?
Yeah, you're so right. And it's something I forget to say quite often. If I'm giving a talk or even in the book, I had to redo the whole start of the book because I hadn't explained it, because I just take it for granted. I'm like, well, basically it was, I thought, I want to do a long run. I want to do it for Girl Guiding. I want to do it in Britain. And then it was just, okay, if I'm doing this run for Girl Guiding and what's my message? And I thought, right, I'm talking to these girls about being brave and pushing yourself. And then I thought, okay, if I do a long run in trainers, I think I can do it. Like, being honest, I've done it before. So therefore, logically, you know, there's evidence there that says I can do a long run in trainers. So I just thought, I'm not doing what I'm asking these young girls to do. So how can I make it more difficult? And this just, I'd read Born to Run and I'd read like loads of other, you know, minimalist running books, and crazy little thought just went in my head, like, well, why do you do it in bare feet? There you go.
Yeah. I've actually got a Born to Run just here. It props up my computer.
I'm like hanging out next to him in the charts. It's brilliant.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah. It was just a crazy thought of how can I make it more of a challenge? And the next thought that came into my head was, don't be ridiculous, you can't do that. Like, straight away, just dismissed it. And I know enough now to know that you shouldn't always listen to that second voice that completely dismisses it. Like, don't be ridiculous, you just can't, full stop. And I thought, well, could I? Like, is that mad? And so it wasn't from any point of view of like, we should all be barefoot. It wasn't like some evangelist thing. It was just literally, how can I make this run more of a challenge? How can I push my body, therefore my mind, a bit more? And how can I set myself a goal that is just terrifying, so that when I'm on this journey talking to these young girls, I am actually walking the walk. You know, I'm actually doing what I'm asking them to do. I'm saying, I'm doing it as well. Look, I'm terrified. So that was the why, really, which is a bit of a convoluted way of saying make it as hard as possible. But it wasn't just for the pure like pain of it. You know, it was there was a reason behind it. I was like, you've got to, if you're trying to advocate for something, you have to be that thing. Otherwise, it's just words, isn't it, really? So, yes, that was the why. Yeah. I'm so glad.
Yeah. No, it's really, really interesting because, yeah, I like doing it in shoes. You know, you just get up and go for a run every day and you've done that before. So, yeah, I totally, totally get it. And I thought it was really interesting the way you explained people's reaction to that in the book. You know, like you call it the fear vomit. You know, yeah. People would just write, they would just shout, "You're wearing no shoes." And you were like, "Oh, am I?"
I couldn't hold it in. It was like, "Oh my God, you've got no shoes on." I was like, "Oh, yeah, I really, no."
It
was, it was such, like you say, it was a really like almost a physical reaction they had to it. They couldn't hold it in. They just had to tell me I had no shoes on.
Yeah.
It was so
Yeah, because yeah. once it was when I was reading Born to Run, actually. I walked through like the whole of London on the tube, and like it was really hot, so I took my shoes off, and yeah. It was really comfy because the tube is nice, like there's hardly any grit and stuff, it's very clean, and loads of people, like this little girl turned around, she was like, "Mummy, that girl's got new shoes on." It really is a social thing. It's a really weird social thing to do, isn't it? Wear no shoes. Whereas yeah. in New Zealand, they go around in no shoes all the time.
Do you know what? That's why I couldn't fit it in the book. But there was a whole section I'd originally written about. I moved to New Zealand for like 5 months before the run, partly because I was like, I think I can run around barefoot there and no one will bat an eyelid. And yeah. they didn't. They were like, "Oh, go on." Like they loved yeah. it. Supermarket and bare feet. Whereas yeah. I got thrown out of several supermarkets in the UK when I was in bare feet.
Thrown out?
Health and safety.
Health and safety? My God, wow.
Yeah, yes, you're right.
I suppose if you tread on a squashed grape, then you might sue them.
I mean, God forbid, you know.
Yeah. Oh my goodness, that's so interesting. Yeah, because I was in New Zealand for a few weeks and I saw loads of people around the supermarket with bare feet, and their feet looked like this, and yeah. our feet look like this, don't they? Yeah. And so I wear wide foot shoes. That's a whole other story. It's fantastic. I think it's brilliant. And the book does cover a little bit about how you trained as well. Can you tell us a little bit more about how you trained? Because you can't just like go from wearing shoes to, I'll run thousands of miles barefoot.
No, and I'm always really clear when I'm trying to tell the story, especially like into an audience and in person on stage or whatever, saying like, I had done as much barefoot running as most of you in the audience have, which is zero at that point. You know, I hadn't. And so it was, how do I get there? And I thought off the bat, I think I need to take this seriously. Not like don't take my challenges seriously, but naivety is my friend. I just go, "Oh, I'll just like work it out. I'm sure my body will adapt." But this one I went, okay, it's going to be quite public. I need to actually make sure I can make the miles. I just started, like, I just thought I'll try different things. And I started with a barefoot run off the bat, just went 20 minutes. It was a complete disaster. And I think I worked out it was a disaster, not only just because it was a shock, but also because you're not trying to change just the surface of your feet itself. You're actually trying to change like what your ligaments and muscles are used to doing. And they've been doing it for your whole life. You know, they've been used to being supported. And my Achilles was just grumbling like crazy for about 6 months. So I just basically sought out experts. I thought, I need to ask for help and advice from people who know about running, you know, gait and feet specifically. Like there was loads of stuff going on at Queen Mary's University in Twickenham. There was a guy studying ultra runners' feet, so I went and had a big chat with him and just trying to understand the intricacies of feet, and just basically go, right, I've got some experts now that tell me I'm not completely mad, it's possible, and I've taken bits of their advice and then smushed it together and kind of made my own training plan, basically, of like slowly catchy monkey. That was it.
yeah it's amazing. And yeah, the book is so honest as well about everything, and you know, the highs and lows of the trip. But I'm just interested to know, having read a couple of your books, and I know you've written cycling books as well, have you always been a runner? Can you just tell everybody a bit about your background in sport in general?
I think I have, but I think the good thing is I never pushed my running to a really, I don't want to say serious point, but I never pushed it to a point where I ever resented it or didn't enjoy it. And so I think that served me really well in later years, because I basically, like, my first memories are of running. I think I've got a really early memory of, I think you were supposed to be 9 years old. It was an Epsom Oddballs race around a hospital in Epsom. And my parents let me run it, even though I was only six. And my mum says to me, she said, I just couldn't believe how hard you pushed yourself. Like, it was insane. And I basically had to drop out before the last lap. My dad had to scoop me up and give me Ribena because I couldn't breathe. And I remember the taste of lactic acid. And I'm like, I was six. Like, that's my first memory. But I just wanted to run. I was like, I just want to run. Wow. And then all through, like, I did loads of other sports, you know, netball, hockey, football, that stuff. And rowing was my big sport. And as a rower, rowers are notoriously bad at running and anything coordinated.
Because you just sit down doing this.
We just sit down, we don't do weight bearing exercise, you know, everyone's got really, they're very tall, quite cumbersome. So notoriously rowers aren't great at running, but I always used to do really well on our kind of cross training days and stuff, and I'd really enjoy the chance to run. So when I retired from rowing in my 20s, running was just this thing that was like free and easy, and I started working in the corporate world, and I'd run to work with my laptop on my back. And so yeah, running's always been there for me, and it's always been this release, this like time for me, and just a way to get from A to B and just go, oh, go on, let's go and have some fun and dress up and run for, you know, a couple of days or whatever. And yeah, and thankfully I've got a body that I think, because I've always done it just a little bit, it's able to do it, although I definitely need to train if I'm doing a long one now.
I know what you mean. Yeah, like, yeah, we're approaching the whole like end of our 30s business. But I don't know about you, actually. You're probably younger than me, aren't you?
Oh my god, I'm 38.
I'm 39.
Yeah, so I love running. I just absolutely love it. I just, and it's so hard when you're pregnant as well, like not running for bits of it.
Tell me about it.
Online, and then after the baby as well, like, I see people out running on New Year's Day, and I was like, oh my god, I want to be that person. It's cold and it's wet, and I want to be out there running. Yeah.
It is. It's really hard. I know. And it's only like for a short time in your life, like, you know, a couple of years. It's nothing compared to like our whole life. But it really is hard, isn't it? Talking about hard things, actually, my next question is, what was the hardest part of the challenge? Because I love how the book is not only about running, but it's about your mental highs and lows, like you get an injury at one point, and it's about how you're pushing yourself inside your head as well as your body. What is the hardest part? Is it the organizing? Because you seem to never stop. Like, you did bathmin as well, which was like bath admin. Yeah. I know when you came to Ars, you did some bathmin as well, and you were doing organization and running, and you didn't get downtime particularly. Like, you had to stay with hosts, and then I know what it's like, because I've done like a 6-day thing around the Isle of Man, but sometimes you just want to go to bed. But you've got to be polite to these hosts and have dinner with them and stuff. And so what would you say was the hardest part of the challenge?
I think it was that continuously being on, and I'd done it all myself, you know. I'm that kind of person that will layer it on and layer it on and layer it on until I break. And if I'm not completely broken, I'm like, oh, there's a little bit more space in there. Let's grab the stuff in.
Yes.
But it kind of had to be like that because of, you know, what I wanted it to create. I mean, I didn't have any idea it would create what it did in terms of the number of people involved and everything. But it really had to be like that. And that was really difficult sometimes, because sometimes I just wanted to switch my phone off for just not even 24 hours, but just 5 hours. I just want to switch my phone off. But, you know, if I did, I would potentially miss an opportunity to like talk to the press for Girl Guiding on their behalf, or I might miss some kind of crucial piece of logistical information. So, yeah, that was really hard. But I have to say, being older and wiser when I did this run, what I did do is... I'm like, I sit in the middle of the introvert extrovert scale.
Oh, okay.
So I did know that if I spent every night staying with people, I would burn out, because, you know what you say, like, you sit down, you want to have dinner, like, you know, it's different because I knew you already before I came and stayed with you. So I was like, oh, it's fine. Like, it's a different vibe. But
yeah, but I remember we watched something on telly that was like a bit like they started talking about sex or something, and we were there with my parents, and I was just like, oh, I hope Anna's okay, or we're just sat here with my parents, and it was a bit cringy.
Yeah,
but I'm sure you were fine.
Totally cool.
You probably don't even remember, but I do. I was like, oh no.
No, you never want to watch sex shows with your parents. That's weird. It's tough.
I don't know if it was animals mating or something like that, but it was just like, oh.
Romantic.
Yeah.
Yeah, but what I did do is I blocked out certain, I grayed out certain days on the spreadsheet that said, okay, these days I need, if I'm in a city normally, I was like, I just need to go and book myself into some travel dodge or like whatever,
yeah,
or some budget hotel, and I just need to just be, let's have some space and time. So I did do that. I think it was once a week or something, I had a grayed out line that said, okay, that's a rest day in terms of I'm not with any hosts. I might still be doing a talk or something, but I've got that time for me. Yeah.
Yeah, so you had that booked in, yeah. That's interesting that you said you're in the middle of the introvert-extrovert scale, because I would have thought that you are like a total extrovert, but that's only because when I see you, it's at like the National Running Show or Kendall Mountain Festival, and you're like on, you know, on.
No.
So yeah, that's really interesting.
It's great, because I think well, our understanding of introversion and extroversion is about loudness. Mm. It's not about, which is actually, it's about where you get your energy from, isn't it? So
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Extroverts draw their energy from other people, and I definitely draw half my energy from other people, but I draw half of it from sitting on my own, like reading a book in a coffee shop, like,
yeah.
So it's and it's hard, because people go, oh, I thought you were an extrovert, and I feel like I'm being fake.
Yeah,
but
you've got blue hair, of course you're an extrovert.
I love people, I absolutely love it, but I get, it's like I'm like a child at a party, like I've had too many party rings, and I run around, I'm Jack Sugar, and then I'm like, okay, I need to lie in a quiet dark room to like recharge.
What. It's getting the balance right. And as you get older, you really do understand yourself more, don't you? It's like, yeah, I totally know what you mean.
I think that's it. I've always been that way. I now only understand why, when I used to go on nights out when I was a teenager, I used to go and sit in the toilet for 5 minutes just to have 5 minutes of peace in the nightclub. I'm like, I wasn't weird. I'm just a bit introverted sometimes.
Yeah. I wasn't just doing a really long poo.
Yeah, that's it.
I just want to bring in one of the live questions right now, because
as a
lovely live question from Brian.
Hi, Brian.
Brian Mosley, who says, wow, is this live now? What a thrill. We love Brian. Please tell us all about, I've put something in the way. Please tell us all about the impact on your feet. How long did it take to adapt, which you kind of covered in the training? And also, yeah, he wants to know about sharp rocks, glass and concrete.
Oh, yeah, good one. Good question, Brian. So, yeah, it took about 18 months probably to get me to a point to being able to run 20 odd miles barefoot.
Wow.
And then during the run, it probably took about 6 weeks to build up even more of that like hard skin. And I guess my skin, the soles of my feet got to the point where, you know, if you sort of scratch your palm of your hands, your fingernails dig in a little bit, but my feet were at the point where it was like they would just shoot off it, you know, that they were really just sort of very, very thick by sort of 6 weeks into the run. But the annoying thing was, is I thought I was going to be able to just dance over gravel at some point during the run, it wouldn't bother me. And I think the reality is, just because I'd done 34 odd years in shoes, and my feet were never going to get to the point where, you know, if I'd grown up in a country where I hadn't worn shoes. So they got strong to a point, but then I had to be very mindful of surfaces. And I mean, sometimes my days would just live and die by the surfaces I was coming across, because you can imagine, you get a sandy beach or grass or mud, even a forest floor, like the pine, spongy pine needles on a forest floor, moss, all that stuff. You got very good at just looking at the trail ahead and almost scanning. Like it really affected your where you look when you run as well, because I had to look like down the trail ahead. But I'd scan, do a quick scan, and be like, don't need to worry for the next 30 seconds. You know, I'm good. But if I was on gravel or rocks or around a city especially, I'd have to be like looking down quite a lot, which gave me a bit of a sore neck sometimes, but also just constantly, like your brain is constantly trying to process what's in front of you. So I guess the short answer is, I never got able to run over absolutely everything, and some surfaces were definitely more of a pain in both senses, like literally mentally and physically, than others. And I really appreciated a good stretch of sandy beach or smooth tarmac, country back roads. actually where the car's tyres have gone and worn the tarmac down. Smooth as baby's bum. Just used to run down a little streak. Loved it.
Lovely. Yeah, I do remember that. I remember in Coventry, where I met you for that, because I'm from Coventry, so Anna stayed with my parents whilst whilst she was doing that section. We met the Godiva statue, and I remember you telling us that you really wanted to run on like the white lines. Lines down the road, like the, and when there was a bus lane, there was a slightly wider one, so you didn't have to do like a ballerina tread of one foot in front of the other. You could actually run semi normally on the big white lines. So I remember that, and whenever I see them now, I always think of that moment.
Funny. I'm such a loser. I know, it was such a challenge in patience as well, because if I had somewhere to be at a certain time, I had to try and work out how long it was going to take me to get there. But if I came across the speed I was going could vary so much depending on what I came across surface wise. Yeah. So sometimes it would really frustrate me. And then other times, if I didn't have anywhere to be, I'd be like, oh, whatever, this section's going to take me ages, but it's fine. But other times it was really frustrating. So it was very mentally tough. I think that took me a while to get used to.
Yeah. And you said also that you could talk about different types of poo until the cows came home, because there was lots of different types of poo that you could step in.
Yeah, everyone, it was so funny, especially kids, they're all obsessed with poo, and everyone's like, oh my God, you would have stepped in poo. And I'm like, poo is just not the worst thing in the world to step in at all. Like, it's fine. It's great. There's like, you can put grass in it. And I mean, sheep poo was my favorite because it's so like squishy and it doesn't seem like your mushroom between your toes. Dog poo still remains the worst kind of poo. Like, horse poo's fine. Cow poo, not problem. But dog poo is just so sticky. It literally like clings to your feet and it just stinks.
Yeah. I was going to say that sounds like the worst kind of poo.
Yeah. So I stepped in more agricultural poo than I did like dog poo, thankfully. Yeah. No cat poo though, but cat poo is pretty hard. You could probably just like kick it out of the way and be fine.
Yeah. And you don't tend to come across a lot of cat poo. Like,
no,
they're usually
pretty just in your living room or in the corner of your dining room. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And what was the absolute worst thing that you stepped in? I know you stepped in something that was kind of rotten and dead at one point.
Oh my gosh, yeah, that was, I was on this road and I was in the Yorkshire Dales actually, and I hadn't got lost because I knew I was lost, but I knew where I was, but I'd taken a wrong turn and I was like, oh no, I better check where I need to be going. And I just stepped back and I put my heel in something cold and wet, and my brain just went, oh, it's a bit of mud or poo or whatever, I'll look in a minute. And then I was looking at my phone, and then I looked down a couple minutes later, and I basically, my heel was in the stomach of a dead rabbit, like a roadkill. And oh my God, it was just, I can still see it now, this poor little bunny. And I just, it was just disgusting. It was absolutely disgusting. It was all slimy. And I kept going back and looking at it and being like, oh my God, and I just felt really bad for the rabbit. And yeah, so definitely a dead animal. That was the worst thing I've stepped in. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's so horrible. Yeah, poor bunny. And I remember reading you got a bit of grit stuck in your foot, two bits of grit at one point. And I was like, how is she running on this grit? Like, oh, surely, like, she needs to, like, but your body sort of expelled it, didn't it? That was really interesting.
Yeah, and it's so hard to explain that, because if you said to me now, oh, you've got a piece of grit stuck in your foot, like, it would really hurt because my soles are really soft. But if you can imagine, I had kind of like 10 layers of hard skin built up. So like, if you think about where the hardest skin on your foot is at the moment, and then add on 10 more layers, it can go in quite a big way and almost not touch your most sensitive part of your foot, if that makes sense, because there's like an arm on there. And so they did annoy me at the start. And then, I basically watched over the course of 10 days, my body just wall it off, like put this extra hard layer of skin around it, and then just gradually push it out of my foot. So every morning it was closer to the surface.
Wow.
And I just thought it was amazing. I mean, it was annoying for the first few days, but then after that, I knew that if I got a piece of grit stuck in there, and it was normally from a really fine gravel trail or something, then it would just take 10 days and, you know, and then the grit would be gone. So I just needed to get through the first few days and everything would be better after that.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. You're totally nails. If I had grit in my foot, I'd be stopping. but there was at one point, wasn't there, where you did have to stop for a bit, wasn't there, where your foot got infected? How did you get, was it a cut that you got, like just a really innocuous cut that you got?
And then to this day, I don't know what went in there, but it like went in, came out, and it was, I can't even explain how tiny this cut was. It was probably 2 millimeters across. Wow. And it was I'd had bigger cuts before, basically. And so I just cleaned it. I think my mistake was probably I didn't probably pay enough attention to it as I should have done. So I probably should have got on the cleaning it earlier. And I think I stood in a river at the end of the next day. I ran 19 miles on it and it was a little bit sore, but I was like, oh, I'll be fine. You know, they're always fine, these cuts. And then my foot just literally blew up. And that was a whole mix of things, frustrating, excruciating, embarrassing, you know, all of the stuff that all the naysayers about the run would be saying, like, what happens if you step on something that hurts your foot? And there it happened. You know, I just felt like an absolute idiot. But I'm so grateful because it was, yeah, I mean, I don't want to ruin the book, but basically, like, it was a long time off my feet, but I was able to get going again. But the hardest part of the whole run was that sitting still. And, yeah, you know what it's like when you can't run, Claire. You're just like, you go bananas.
You do.
And also knowing you can't run, but then you don't know when you can run again. Like, that is just, which a lot of people have with injuries, don't they? You know, you just got to be patient, and patience is really annoying.
did you think at that point, were you thinking, oh my God, I might have to jack the whole thing in?
Yeah. And that's what I talked through with Jamie, my other half. I was saying to him, I think you have to go to that place sometimes, you know, because what's worse is you're thinking, oh, what if this happens? But then if you go there and go, okay, worst case scenario, this is the end of the run. I was 1,000 miles in and I thought, you know, I will have to be okay with that. And I just have to go. I still ran 1,000 miles, you know, with no shoes on. Like, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
But I just wanted to carry on. I really wanted to carry on. So.
Yeah. And it's like, it's only a little break. I mean, you could have taken a month and then carried on. Like, you still would have done it. Yeah.
I know. Yeah. That's the thing as well, because the seasons were looming in and I was thinking, the longer I take off, I could have run through winter, but I thought I don't want to run through winter. So therefore, all I'm doing is missing miles, you know, as in like I'm going to have to just take this chunk of time out. And that was just like every day I was like, that's another 20 miles, like gone. Yeah. I'm not going to get them back. You know, there's no time.
Yeah, it was really hard. Like, I loved how the book covered the mental side of things as well. So it's kind of, like, I read it as kind of like a bit like a self-help book, because I was thinking, oh, she's explained how she's dealt with this and she's explained how she deals with this. And like, you go into a little bit of detail, well, no, quite a lot of detail about like how you deal with times of depression and how, I've written loads of notes here about how amazing it was. Let me just remind myself. Just like coping with worry, as well. You've got this really beautiful way of describing coping with worry, and it's like beautiful butterflies in your stomach. And and there was something about social media as well. Like how you deal with the social media comments. And it's just really nice, and it's just really refreshing to get a book that's so honest. And I just really, really loved it, as well as your book recommendations as well, Michelle Obama's autobiography, and how you love Tina Turner and Lizzo. So yeah, there's just loads of really nice otherly recommendations, because of course you're not just a runner, you're a person that does all sorts of adventures. So I just thought that was really refreshing. So I'd go on about that a bit.
No, that's the thing that connects us all, isn't it? That is the way we all think about those things, no matter what the challenge is. Those thought processes are the things that actually where the common ground is between a lot of us. So thank you, because I had to work really hard to do that, because sometimes you think things that you don't want to put into writing.
And so it
was a bit scary to repeatedly do that. But also I'm a psychology graduate, like my background's in psychology. So basically these adventures are just a way for me to like mess around with what's going on in my brain.
Do a big experiment.
Yeah, basically, yeah. It's like, oh, what happens if I do that? Oh, I break and I cry. Okay, cool. Yeah. Like,
okay.
I enjoy that chat equally as much as the kind of the wilderness adventure running chat. I love the mindset stuff as well. So, yeah, good. I'm glad that came across.
Yeah, no, it was amazing. I love the book. I think you're a great writer. I just think it's brilliant. I just wanted to understand a little bit about, I don't think we've talked enough about these amazing brownies and guides that you met along the way. How important was it to you to keep going and speaking to all these girl guides? Because like, not only are you running, and not only are you running barefoot, not only are you like sorting out loads of logistics daily, but you're also giving talks as well on the way. Like, how on earth did you find the energy to do that? It's just so fantastic. How important is it to chat to those girls?
Yeah, I don't know. Sometimes I was like, what am I doing? This is too much. But selfishly, they would give me energy. I would end a day and think, oh my God, I just wish I could just crawl into bed right now. Literally, it's 6 o'clock. I want to go to sleep. But then I mean, you just within 5 minutes of even just walking in the room, not even talking to the girls, like you walk in the room, they'll go, oh, she's here. Yeah. And because I've got, you know, at that point, I've got pink hair, I've got tattoos. And, you know, I'm just, I think to some of them, especially in the Shetland Islands, the one of the leaders said to me, I think they're a bit bewildered by you. Like they're not used to seeing people, like, you know, it's really funny. And so it just makes me laugh. Within a few minutes, I'm laughing. And then I start telling stories, and you know what kids are like and their energy. It's just, you get carried along. And before I know it, you know, I normally was given like a half an hour talk, but I was there for an hour and a half, or whatever. And then the time's gone. And then you just leave and you're buzzing because some of the things they've said or the adventures they've said they want to go on. And even if it's not sporting, like I just was trying to understand, like, what is it that you want to do and see if I could just, yeah. And I just always think if I left there and even just one girl thought differently about her ability to do something that she really wanted to do, then that's all you can ever do, isn't it? You're trying to just, it's great to do mass stuff, but you sometimes need to get right down to the one person level. Yeah. So, and it seemed to do that with a lot of them. So that just, it just would fuel me on for the next one. And I'm like, this is so worth it. It's absolutely worth it. Like, yeah.
Yeah. And it was about more than you, wasn't it? I really got that from the book. And you just felt like you were, as it went on, you were part of this like big kind of whirlwind going down the UK, whipping up everyone.
And I'm just clinging on.
Yeah. And I just love this little, I hope I'm not spoiling the book for anyone, but it says, you said at one point that the brownies were like, oh, you've got pink hair. And you said, yeah, I've got pink hair because my mum is a unicorn. I just thought, oh, that's so funny. That's just so wonderful. Yeah. I love that. Yeah.
Some of them, if they were young enough, you could actually convince them that I was born with pink hair. It was really sweet. I shouldn't lie to children. But I was like, you're not born with pink hair. And they were like, no, my hair was brown when I was born. And I was like, oh, my God, my hair was pink.
Oh, I think it's lovely. It's just really lovely. What was the best part then? So, like, speaking to the brownies and guides, like, sounds like a really good part. But was there one single best part, or was there just certain times when you were like, yeah, this is the best idea I've ever had in my life?
I think selfishly, I mean, the most amazing thing about the run was the amount of people that got involved, both like the everyday runners that came out and run with me and the girl guiding community. That was the most amazing standout thing. But selfishly, the best moments were, like, I think there was one day where I was running across the Yorkshire Dales and the sun was going down and the surface was great beneath my feet and I was barefoot. And I just thought, this is awesome. Like, this is what running is about. You know, that kind of just the connection to the landscape, the feeling like I was in it and I was a part of it. And I'm using my body and I'm human powered and I'm sweaty. And like, that to me was just like those moments. I had a few of them. And there was like one in Scotland where it happened when I was running up this mountain. It's always in the evening time. And there's, you know, there's that beautiful quiet in the evening sometimes, isn't there, if you're out in the countryside. Those were the moments where I was like, this is the best idea I've ever had. I'm so glad that I'm here. This is just gorgeous. And because I'm barefoot, I'm able to experience it fully. You know, there's literally nothing between me and this earth. It's amazing. Yeah.
Awesome. It does sound beautiful. Like, and you describe those moments beautifully in your book. Like, I particularly love that one where you just like put your head straight down in the moss and you're breathing in the moss. And you're like, oh, it smells so mossy. That was just brilliant. I just thought that your idea of having an adventure pace was really good as well. Because, you know, people were joining you and they were like, oh, no, I don't know if I'm going to be able to keep up with Anna. But you were like, no, everyone slow down. You're only running for like 20 miles. I've been running for 1,000. And I thought it was so good the way a load of people that you ran with, they'd only run like 5 miles before. And then all of a sudden they were joining you for 20 miles and you were compass mentors enough all the way through all of the running to realize and to help those people, like you still had the energy to be excited for them. And I just thought that was really cool as well.
Yeah, it was a really nice distraction actually, because if it was all about just me and my run, like it was too much. It's like you don't want to talk about yourself or think about yourself that much. I mean, it's just too much. So when people would come out and I'd go, oh, that's one of those people, okay. And I'd never catch it at the start because everyone would say, oh, I'm just going to run this many miles. I'm like, whatever, cool, like, you know, do whatever you want. And then I'd start realizing, and that sort of person or a couple of people would sort of emerge from the group, and I'd go, oh wow, they're really like, they've gone into the pain cave, and I can't explain it because I've not asked them to do it. No one's asked them to do it. Something inside themselves has said, I want to run further than I ever have done today, and they're doing it, and they didn't expect to do it. And I mean, how can you not get excited about that? It's just like, you just know that they're going to go home that night, they're going to have a bath and a cup of tea, and they're going to wake up next morning and go, right, what next? Like, what can I, what am I capable of now that I've gone past that place where I always just told myself I couldn't do it? And yeah, really, really special. And then there were so many people I couldn't, I think there are a couple of examples of that in the book, but there were so many more that I couldn't put in the book because, yeah. You know, you get this, right? You're an editor. The editor was like, you're kind of saying the same thing over and over again. You just need to pick one story. And I was like, oh God, it's so hard. So yeah, there were some other just fantastic people. Like there was a nurse called Amy who'd come off like a double, this isn't in the book. She'd come off a double night shift. And she was like 8 o'clock in the morning, and she said, I'm just going to run a few miles. I've only like, she'd run a half marathon years ago, but she came out and ran like 22 miles.
Wow.
And she had three kids at home. She had like postnatal depression. She'd gone through it all. And we were just like feeding her jelly baby. She was roaring like a lion by the end. This is on the outskirts of Leeds. And I'm like, cheering her into this car park, like near Barnsley somewhere, like, oh, well done, like this. And just tears coming down my face. And Amy's like,
it's so life affirming, isn't it? I feel like you went around the UK like planting all these little seeds, like in young minds, in adults' minds, and like everyone who joined you. I think it was like a thing of joy, a whirlwind of joy is how I would describe this run and you in general. I think it's brilliant. I was thinking about this when I met you and when you came to stay, you didn't smell at all. I ran with you for a whole day. You didn't smell at all. And I suddenly thought in the book, how is she not smelling? Because you do say at some point you were like, oh my God, I smell really bad, but I don't think you did. I think you
really
smelled roses. Yeah, I don't remember.
I literally had, well, I haven't had one set of running shorts, one set of long legs, and then two t-shirts. So I was alternating them. I think I'd chosen materials that were quite good, you know, that were wicking and whatever.
Yeah.
And then because I was staying with quite a lot of hosts, I guess they would say, can I wash anything? Quite often I'd go, yeah, do you know what? Can you throw that in the wash, or just like it needs to be, and it would dry quite quickly. So maybe that. The worst thing I smelled of though towards the end was TCP, because I started TCPing my feet because after the foot infection, it then healed and I basically needed to keep it clean. And TCP just, I mean, it gets everywhere and it stinks everything out. I got the bag, but the big yellow bag.
The signatures on.
Yeah. And I want to use it, but it smells of TCP so much still, like 5 years on. This is 4 years on or whatever. Oh, crazy. I know.
Can you fight it with Febreze? Can Febreze maybe. And TCP have a fight?
Yeah, like, I need to really go at it. Yeah. I need to do something. But but towards the end, people would hug me and they'd say, oh, you smell of TCP. And I go, oh, God, I'm so sorry. And they said, no. Some people would really like it. Like, oh, this is really nice. You smell like a hospital.
You smell clean at least.
That's good to know, because I've hugged a fair few adventurers in my time, and while they're on adventurers, and I've sometimes gone a bit like, whoa, you do smell of like adventure musk. That's understandable, but good.
That is a nice way of putting it. Oh well, I laughed out loud at your book so many times. I've folded over so many pages of really cool things that you've said. I love how you made up words, and I'm going to ask you a bit about the writing part now. You made up words like, I hope I'm not spoiling the book. Like, you must buy this book, everyone. Just by
don't
the way,
worry.
There's a link in the film description.
Chat about it. Don't worry about it. It's good. Go for it. Yeah.
Like, I've written notes. I read Anna's book and I wrote notes with page numbers. And I really liked the fandango of runners, because you didn't have a collective noun for runners. So I thought that was great. I was like, she's Shakespeare. This woman, a Rolando, which is a Rolo and banana at the same time in your mouth. That was around Anglesey. And also, not only did you make up words, but you introduced me to new words from other languages, which is, that's just so much in this book. So I really liked your concept of, I don't know if I'm pronouncing this right, I think it's Portuguese, Querência, which is a home anywhere. And I feel like I have that too, because anywhere, if I'm going on a trip and I put my backpack down and it's got all my things in and my little trip diary, I feel at home, whereas my husband's very much like, my house, with all the things that I have decorated in the house that is my home. And I'm like, I can feel at home anywhere. Like, I can just go anywhere. And if I'm there, you're there. If my mum and dad are there or my sister, I feel at home. And so that word, that one word, was really good to discover. So thank you.
Yeah. Oh, you're welcome. Yeah, I love words. Like, I think that's, I've always loved words since I was a kid. And those words, because there's another one in the book, like, saudade or something, which is another, it's that Portuguese word.
Yeah.
And
I
come across these words and I sort of squirrel them away and I put them in like my bookshelf. And then, so then when I'm writing a new book, I go, oh, I remember that word that's really appropriate for this. I'm trying to describe this feeling of home, but I can't quite. And then I go, oh, I remember that cool word I once learned about from another language. So yeah, cool. I'm glad you appreciated that.
Yeah, I really did.
I love words.
Yeah, and I loved the way that the book was teaching me stuff as well. I was like, not only am I just enjoying this entire story, but it's actually teaching me stuff as well. It's brilliant. I just want to read you out a couple of live comments, just come back to the live. If you've got any more questions for Anna, everyone, by the way, then just do feel free. But Tad Cantwell says, hi, really enjoyed Anna's Barefoot Run documentary. So he's obviously watched you you were making a film of it, weren't you?
Yeah, there's a YouTube series. There's like 25 episodes or something, little ones. Yeah.
Yeah.
They were really the girls. Cool. They were awesome. But yeah, I'm so glad I've got them because it's this video diary. It's cool.
Yeah, video diary. And of course, I made a little film as well of running with you. Which I'll put up here. I'll try and remember to just put it up here. Above Anna's head will appear a little icon. You can watch it there. We had a fantastic run, didn't we, that day? We met Sally, and Sally's in the book. Dressed as an orange. Yes. And I did want you to know I ate half a chocolate orange in preparation for this conversation and it reminded me of her. But yeah, that was a great day, wasn't it, running with Sally dressed as an apple. I think we were.
She was an apple. Did she lend you the orange outfit?
I think we were both apples.
Oh, okay. Was double apples.
Well, she's called Sally Orange, and she's like the fastest marathon runner wearing pieces of fruit, isn't she? Yeah. As pieces of fruit. Yeah.
Best collection frame ever.
Yes. So that was really cool, wasn't it? Oh, sorry, I was reading out New Year comments. Peter says Happy New Year, and Ian says the world needs more people like Anna. Thank you, I really enjoy your adventures. Oh. Yay! Oh, that's good.
Thank you.
And yes, writing the book. So, writing takes a lot of energy and mental capacity. How on earth do you remember all the detail? Like, I was just reading the book going, how on earth does she remember like the smell of this and this? Did you look at your photos and be like, oh yes, this is this bit here? Because you're writing this a year, 2 years later, even having had a baby, and it's like, how does she remember? Did you write a diary? Like,
yeah, I did. I think because sixth book, okay, so done five like adventure adult books, so I think by this point, even at starting the run, I wasn't going into it going like it's all about writing a book, but I knew I would write a book about it. So I just had got better at documenting, but I always start off thinking, oh, I'm going to document this way. So in South America or in New Zealand, I would document I'd be in my tent at 6 o'clock at night in the middle of nowhere, so I'd write notes.
Yeah,
but I couldn't do that on this run purely because I was constantly on the go, and when I stopped, I was with someone. So it's a bit rude if you're like, hang on for 5 minutes while I just write my notes.
You could go to the toilet for 5 minutes.
Yeah, I'd do a little cheeky toilet trip. But mostly I would actually do myself voice memos while I was on the run. So I'd record voice memos, and especially if I see something really beautiful, I'd start the voice recording and I'd talk, but then I'd like hold the phone up so you could hear it, like the trickle of a stream or the wind or something. And that would take me back to that place. Or I'd take a picture. So in the Yorkshire Dales, for example, I ran through these over Kidstone Pass. There's these amazing like limestone crags. And I was like, that's amazing. And there was the blue sky and the green of the dales, and I was this like this stark line between the two. And so I took a picture of it, and then I went in on my map and I like circled in red on the map. So I took like a couple of minutes on the road to say, oh, this is that section, this is where I am, and this is the thing I'm excited about. So that when I go back through my photos, I can go, it was sort of a lot of work. But the video diaries helped, but I didn't use them much. I thought I'd use them more, but it was almost too much information. I always think, the cool stories are in your head anyway, and they're ready to come out. So,
and you can't have too much, can you? You've got to pick the highlights because you can't put everything in there.
Oh, I wrote 190,000 words, Claire, and this has turned out 120 or something. So the 70,000 words got cut.
You could publish it online somewhere behind a paywall, and all your biggest fans could pay like 99p to read the rest of it. I would.
Yeah, there's some cut scenes that are out there. Because there are whole characters I had to just remove because they just didn't fit with the, you know, like a good story needs to be like fast and then slow and then fast and then chop, chop, chop like that. And it was like it'd been too slow for too long, and I needed motion, and I couldn't go into this 3-page thing about how wonderful this person was. So I had to take them out. But they're just sitting there, so there are some cut scenes, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I definitely just put it all online and
to them, actually. I can send you the link to the cut scenes, so you can put it on the video if you want. If people want to go and get the cut scenes, you can do that.
Yeah, why not? Definitely send me everything. I think you've got like a certain amount of like, there's lots of fans, and then there's like a core group, isn't there? Like hardcore fans that will literally love anything you put out, even if it was just like a cat sat on a mat. It's like, oh my god, Anna wrote that. Ah. And I just wanted to ask you as well, how you fitted it in with having Storm as well, because having had Finley at quite a similar time, I think you had Storm like a little bit before, a month before I had Finley.
19th of December she is. When's Finley?
19th of January. And exactly a month before. So we've got like similar time frames here, and I'm just sitting there thinking, how on earth did she fit in this level of good quality work? Like, I was barely hanging on. I was just like, I'll just type out that thing there, I'll just speak like this. And I was just like, oh my god, how's her brain working on minimal sleep? How did you fit it in?
In little bursts, but also it took me so long to write this book. I mean, so I did it in 2019, and I'd written a huge chunk of it before we went into lockdown, and I thought, great, I'll use lockdown to finish it off. And I was pregnant with Storm, and I had to park it because I wasn't in the headspace. I just couldn't work it out. So I had written a lot of it. It was still a complete mess. But then when Storm came along, it was just like, if I could get an hour here or there, I don't know about you, but I became so much more efficient when you have a kid. You go, what did I do with my time before I had a child? If I had an hour, it was like, go, go, go. I literally had a table at the bottom of my garden in the summer. So I'd go down there, noise cancelling headphones on, sit under this little tree with an artist table, my laptop, or we live next to a country park, like Gloucestershire Wildlife Trust, and there's a cafe there. So I literally like run over there because the 5 minutes running over there was really important. Like, I needed that time.
Yeah.
45 minutes of editing or writing. And it was just like chip, 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 chip. And the you know, in a dream world, I wouldn't have brought out a book just before I'm about to have twins, because I don't have the chance to like do all the stuff you need to do when you bring a book out. But I just thought, right now, when I knew we were having a baby, I thought, okay, I need to get this book out. I could probably get it out maybe after the baby's born. And then when I found out we were having twins, I was like, oh, this book needs to come out before these babies do, because I'm not gonna have time. You just cram it in. I think the short answer as well is it became my number one priority. I had to, if I had an hour, it had to be on the book. Which is great, because I love, you know, writing. I even like, I enjoy the editing process, even though it's laborious and hard.
It holds together really well. And that's why I knew that you were going to say you had to snatch like hour long chunks. And I was like, but it doesn't seem like that from the book, because it feels like you sat down and you just went like that. Yeah. Like it feels really coherent and together. And I just think that's amazing what you did.
Well,
like, what you went through.
You're an editor though as well, and that is credit to the two. I have two fantastic editors, and the first one is a structural editor, and she, although she said this is the least amount of work I've had to do on any of your books, but I've learned from her as the years have gone on.
Brilliant.
And then the other one was similar, but they add that extra bit of like tightening, and they're really honest of like, why are you going off on one about, you know, viaducts looking like giant's legs? Like, not relevant, Anna. And I'm like, but they really do look like giants in the landscape.
They do.
And they're like,
oh, relevant. Yeah, they are.
So,
I get it. Yeah. Oh, well, that's just fantastic. Well, the book is brilliant. I just think everybody should buy this book. It will inspire you to go on your own running adventure, I think. And there is a link in the film description below, or you can just Google it. And I do have, do you have time for just one more live question,
yeah,
Anna?
Do it.
Sorry, I couldn't answer everybody's questions. This is from Trail Running Phil, who says, Anna McNuff, what a legend.
So, hi, Phil.
Got quite a few fans watching here. He says, and how is Adventure Man doing as well, Anna? And he wants to know, apart from the whole twin thing, is there any future plans that you can talk about? But I suppose, I don't know about you, but I wouldn't be able to think about anything beyond having twins.
Yeah, no, I think the thing is, me and Jamie, aka Adventure Man, we, you know, Jay, for anyone who doesn't know, he's like run across Canada dressed as a superhero, run across America, cycled from Bangkok back to Gloucester. Like, we both are cut from the same cloth. We love adventure, it's in our bones. But equally, both of us are like, we've probably got 5 years where the kids are going to be at that stage where their needs are really important, and it's about snatching little adventures where we can. Like, we took Storm to Thailand for like 3 months last winter because British winters can get a bit hard, and I was like, well, we don't need to be here. So little things like that. And so no plans for like a big adventure for a while, but I think it's just going to be smaller adventures, and you can still get that, like, that hit, you know, that feeling hit. And also, I'm really excited about it because I think it's a lot more accessible to a lot of people, these smaller things, you know, things I can go and do in a weekend, or things where Jamie can, we've just had to buy a god awful big car that can fit three children in, and
I'm like, bus.
Things where he can drive that alongside, and I can like do a half marathon, and then we can swap, and we can maybe like tag team a trail or something. I don't know.
You'll have to get a really big trailer for the bike. I saw that trip that you did in France with Storm on the back of the bike, yes. And that was really inspiring. That made me take Finley out for an hour on the bike because he's really active, so I can't really pin him down for long periods of time. Yeah. But you gave me more confidence to just pin him down for an hour on the bike.
Yeah, we basically worked out the best way to cycle tour with a child is you cycle while they're napping, and that's it. And but then they've got this energy and you're knackered. I'm definitely, we're so, and I say it to Jamie all the time, like we're not stopping. Like, I'm not stopping adventuring. It's just going to be different, and it's just like, how can we cycle tour with three kids? Like, what does that look like? What kind of weird tricycle contraption do we need to get to make that happen? And so there'll be lots of little adventures, I think. And I think you can never suppress that sort of wanderlust for just the new and the different. So lots of little adventures. One day I would love to do a really big swim because I love swimming.
Oh, really?
So that is on the cards, but not for a few years, I reckon.
Yeah, a really big swim. Like, who's really that guy? Ross Edgley. Russ Edgley?
Yes. Yeah. Well, him and Sean, they swam around the coast of Britain. No, I'm going somewhere warm. I'm going to Greece. Yeah. I'm eating fried cheese.
Well,
I'm
drinking sharks.
Yeah, that's it. Oh yeah, a few sharks. I might ride a few sharks.
Yeah.
I love I read loads of books about swimming, wild swimming. I love cold swimming. So one day, or maybe even like a swim run. I love that combo as well. I think it's brilliant.
Oh yes, I'm interviewing a lady in next month who's just done the Frog Graham Round.
Brilliant.
She's just done it, and so I just thought that was fantastic. And I think Vassos is getting into swimming, so, you know, Vassos Alexander, he's really getting into open, like, cold water swimming as well. So have you been swimming lately? Do you still swim still?
I do, yeah. Our local Lido stayed open through the winter, and I was cold dipping with Storm until like my first kid until I was overdue. So I've been doing it with these two, and even though I get to the Lido and people are like, oh, is that safe, you're pregnant, I'm like, it keeps me sane, like, I love it.
There's not a lot of research done into all that kind of thing, is there? And
it's really hard.
When you're pregnant, everyone's like, oh, don't do it just in case, and it's really annoying.
I spoke to, I've got a friend that wrote, like, she's written a couple of really famous midwifery books, and I spoke to her about it. I was like, am I mad? Like, what is actually happening, like, to my placentas when I'm, and she said, they are fine, like, they are so cocooned in there, like, don't worry about it and you'll know. And I think because I've always done cold water swimming, it gives me, like, the benefit really outweighs, for me anyway. It's like, if you love doing something, just keep doing it.
Yeah. And keep doing it. Yeah, I'm definitely all for that. I think it's absolutely fantastic. That's brilliant. Well, I'm aware that we're running out of time now. I've got to let you get back to Storm and all your day and preparing for the arrival of these exciting twins. But I just wanted to say thank you so much for chatting to us. Really loved reading the book. And I hope that everybody else will buy it and really enjoy reading it too. If people want to follow you and your micro adventures, then how can they follow you?
Oh, just put Anna McNuff into Google social media. Luckily, I'm the only Anna McNuff in the world. I've got a really unusual surname. Isn't that cool?
Wow,
it's great.
Amazing.
Don't search. Yeah, I know, it's good.
That's
so
brilliant.
It's pretty easy to find me. Yeah, but thank you, Claire. Honestly, this has been, you've been a breath of fresh air. It's so lovely, like, to just, to talk about it. Like, I've not done many chats about the book, so it's really a pleasure. I loved it.
Awesome. That's fantastic. Oh, thank you so much, Anna. It was lovely to speak to you. I'm seeing lots of people writing, I must get the book now.
Well, thank you, everyone.
I think you've sold at least one. Cool. Right, we'll say bye to everybody now. We'll still be on Skype, but I'll say bye to everyone now and get Anna's book and read it immediately. Bye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.